raccoon. A raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mom just chased him off with a broom.
Welcome to Doc's Freedom Files.
Freedom. Keep walking. Keep on your toes and don't stop talking about freedom.
An ancient Buddhist proverb states, "When the student is ready, the teacher will appear." In April of 2013, Logan County, West Virginia, witnessed a teacher appear in the form of a student. Logan Middle School student Jared Markham, age 14, was suspended from school and arrested by the Logan Police Department. A student suspension and arrest might not seem unusual in these troubled times, but Jared's story is remarkable. He wasn't arrested for vandalism, violence, drug abuse, or any of the other countless ills affecting American learning institutions. No, Jared was arrested for exercising his First Amendment rights. Jared, an honor student, wore a National Rifle Association t-shirt supporting the Second Amendment. The shirt featured a graphic of a rifle and the caption, "NRA, Protect Your Right." He wore the shirt for several classes without incident until lunch, when an authoritarian thug masquerading as an educator demanded that he remove the shirt or turn it inside out. Jared, quite correctly, refused to remove his shirt and attempted to engage the teacher in conversation, yet the educator's response was to have the police brought in. These police, authoritarian thugs in their own right, proceeded to arrest Jared on the preposterous charge of obstruction and disturbing the education process. Now, before any of you listeners take umbrage at my description of these particular cops as authoritarian thugs, I want you to look deeply into your souls and ask yourself why the police didn't arrest the teacher for violating Jared's First Amendment rights. You see, authoritarianism begets authoritarianism, and history teaches that the only proper place for the "I was only following orders" mentality is in a Nuremberg courtroom. Logan County School Superintendent Wilma Zygmunt reportedly told news organizations she could not discuss Jared's case. In a way, I sympathize with Mrs. Zygmunt. It's uncomfortable to discuss the indefensible and impossible to justify it. Make no mistake, the personality that feels it appropriate to call the police against a student peacefully exercising his or her First Amendment rights would be right at home employed in a Soviet gulag or a North Korean concentration camp. Further, the police who would willingly respond to such a call and arrest the student would be exactly the type hired as camp guards and enforcers. Jared served his suspension and, undeterred, wore his NRA shirt again upon his return to school. In his own way, Jared has taught his community the individual meaning of the First Amendment, and in doing so, displayed more guts than a lot of adults many times his age. So today, I tip my hat to modern American hero and teacher, Jared Markham. Good on you, lad. This is Doc Toops wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Oh, so can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets regular, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still. Star-spangled banner, yeah.
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and welcome to The Shooting Bench, the most radical, right-wing, conservative, no-holds-barred, information-packed, freedom-loving firearms information program on talk radio.
Beginning right that you mess with the U.S. of A. Because we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Terrible Sam, put your name at the top of his list.
All right, Thanksgiving Eve, 2019, 27th of November. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. We've got quite a variety of stuff tonight. We do have several gun-related things, so we'll get on with that here in a little bit. There's some disturbing news, and let me see. Okay, let me make sure I've got everything turned on here. Sound should be good. All right, let's get started here. I'm not sure. I don't have these in any particular order, so let's just do the best we can with what we got. To start with, it looks like the Christmas tree arriving in Washington, D.C. for this Christmas is coming out of New Mexico. It's apparently a 68-year-old tree, weighs 5 tons, and has made more than 2 dozen stops across 7 states before it got to D.C. So as blue as New Mexico has become, I know that there's some people that are proud to have this tree displayed at the White House this year. So that's a good thing. And this is not a good thing, but it's a good thing that he did. The last person to work on Mount Rushmore has died at the age of 98 years old. His name was Nick Clifford, Don Clifford. His middle name, his nickname was Nick. He was one of the original team members. How awesome would that be to look back and see and tell your grandkids, take them on a trip and look up there and say, I took part in designing, carving, you know, cleaning up after whatever. I was part of that team. That would be very cool. He was the very last one of the bunch to pass away. He was reportedly worked on it for 2 years, from 1938 to 1940, and one of about 400 people to work on it between 1927 and 1941. That's a long time to work on a statue, a carving, a monument, whatever. Said he spent a lot of time there talking to visitors while all this was going on. So Nick Clifford, may you rest in peace, brother. It was good work there. I appreciate that. Okay. By the way, let me slip this in. I just read this and didn't have time to get the link in. I just read this just literally as I was sitting down here. Of all the good things that we've liked about Chick-fil-A, of all the fighting that we did and the protesting of the other side and all that, it appears that the other side should not have been protesting them to start with. They may have protested what their original message was, you know, not open on Sundays I guess you'd call it anti-gay stance that they took and all that, but they seemed at one time to be a very Christian organization, and they were. I mean, because we did a story, or Amy did here just recently, about the founder of Chick-fil-A and some of the wonderful things that they did. So this is not the founder's fault. This is a fault of the Chick-fil-A Foundation. And apparently they have changed sides dramatically on us. The Chick-fil-A Foundation now is no longer donating to the Salvation Army. And what was the other one? Let me see if I can find this in another deal here right quick. Just had it up here. So stand by here with me just a second and I'll get it going here. Okay, here we go. They apparently had, now I'm still open to find if there's somebody out there that can dispute this from a reputable source, but as best I can tell, it is very much true. The money that they've been donating to Salvation Army and there was one other, the Fellowship for Christian, or Fellowship of Christian Athletes, which has another one that has come under attack from the gay activist groups. They have apparently caught us all here by surprise. And they are taking the money that they donated to those, to the Salvation Army and that other deal. And they're now donating to a number of other, sources or a number of other, entities, outfits, whatever, that we ordinarily wouldn't approve of. They thought that the donations, like I said, coming out of the Chick-fil-A Foundation, the executive director, Rodney Bullard, is a former White House guy, an assistant U.S. attorney. And a lot of people may have thought that was a good thing, that he was conservative because he was in the part of the Bush administration. However, he was also an Obama donor and more recently has donated to Hillary's campaign while at Chick-fil-A. They said, let's see, let me read this so I get it right. Like many corporations, Chick-fil-A branded its charitable giving as a form of social responsibility. Bullard became its vice president of corporate social responsibility. Like charity, corporate social responsibility is a leftist endeavor to transform corporations into the political arms of radical causes. Like other formerly conservative corporations, Chick-fil-A had made the fundamental error of adopting the language and the infrastructure of its leftist peers, and that made what happened entirely inevitable. In the interview with Business Insider earlier this year, Bullard emphasized that the Chick-fil-A Foundation had a higher calling than any political or cultural war. The foundation boss was preparing the way for the shakeup that was coming in the fall. Even while he claimed that the CFA Foundation had a higher calling than political and or cultural war, he was preparing to accommodate the left's cultural war. So there's quite a bit more about that, but the, let's see, there was a deal down here somewhere. Corporate responsibility. Chick-fil-A Foundation will go on funding leftist groups like Atlanta's Westside Future Fund. They said there's $1.7 million that the Westside Future Fund shoveled in last year from the Chick-fil-A Foundation, vastly outpaces the mere $115,000 that the Salvation Army got for its Angel Tree program to provide gifts for poor children during the holidays. But even that low-end six-figure donation was too much, and the gifts had to be snatched away from the kids by leftist pressure groups and identity politics protesters. The less publicized donation of $100,000 went to Sustainable Atlanta. That could have bought a lot of gifts. There was also a $10,000 donation to Ceres, to Suits, whose mission is to advance women empowerment, education, gender equality, and social justice. So there's money for social justice, but not for the Salvation Army, apparently. $5,000 was allotted to Friends of Refugees. So this latter thing here, they're donating money to those who would demand that Chick-fil-A change their, you know, have a halal certified menu or whatever they call it. So there's money for Muslim refugees, but not for the Salvation Army. So unless something comes up that disputes this, something legitimate, then we are here at Shooting Bench forevermore done with Chick-fil-A, unfortunately. I supported them heavily for a while, but I'm over that now, so it's all done. Okay, moving right along here. This is a little disturbing out of Virginia. You know, the first revolution started out in that neck of the woods out there, not too far, and looks like the next one, the first Civil War ended, I guess, out there is what I should say. And looks like the next one may be starting there if some people have their way. But there's quite a gun ban going on out there. It looks like they may be confiscating without a grandfather clause. So any guns that you already have that fall within their parameters there, their policies, their written legislation, whatever the heck it is, that's going to be taken anyway. And I heard something I don't know if it's worse, but it's just as bad, that they are talking about banning people training other people with firearms, that there is a fear of creating, well, in their words, militia groups. And that's pretty broad the way they worded this. So this could be a very serious problem. Said Virginians, let me go, rifles under the new bill would not be allowed. Pistol grips, bayonet mounts, grenade or flare launchers, silencers, muzzle brakes. They can't even spell brake right. And flash suppressors. Virginians would also not be allowed pistols that accept the magazine into the weapon at any point other than the pistol grip. Pistols that would have an unloaded, and also pistols would also have an unloaded weight limit of 50 ounces. Now that doesn't make any sense at all. If you were going to ban something, it would appear to me that you would want to get some of the smaller a little Glock 42s, 43, something that you could drop in a pocket of your trousers and walk into a school with or something. What difference does it make if it weighs 50 ounces? So your Desert Eagle or whatever, they're banning those. Hasn't been a whole lot of mass shootings with Desert Eagles. It seems like there may have been one, but I'm not sure. Limit shotguns to a magazine capacity of no more than 7 shells. Well, that's bad, but at least it's not limited to 2 like for bird hunting. So I'm not sure what their idea for that was either. It's kind of dumb. Let's see. The provisions of this act may result in a net increase in periods of imprisonment or commitment, indicating increased imprisonments as one likely outcome of its passage. See, American Military News tried to get a hold of these people, no response. In reaction to, the NRA also noted the bill does not grandfather in existing owners of the firearms described. Current owners would reportedly have to give up their banned firearms or face felony conviction. So, violation of this is going to constitute a Class 6 felony, it says. So let me go back up here at the top, and it says, they've just introduced this bill. It doesn't look like it's been voted on or passed yet. And I would like to think that a lot of that will be changed, but I don't know for sure. So let me take a look at this right here. Stand by just a second. All right. Well, let's continue to march here. Okay. In Miami, I read this story today, and this guy is, You know, he did the right thing. He did everything like he should. It's what he's doing afterwards that could potentially get him in trouble. I don't know. Maybe not in Florida. They were, you know, Florida was the one of the first, if not the first, to have, you know, stand your ground laws and make my day laws and all that kind of stuff. But the things he's saying here are very much not what we advocate saying after a shooting. He had a, I think he had a Glock. I don't remember what caliber it was or if it even said. But he's from Jamaica. He's worked as a security guard. He has quite a bit of training. He's very familiar with these guns. And some guy opened his door of his van. I guess they were sleeping in the van for whatever reason. And let's see. No, it doesn't say here. I guess they were just in the van. Man tried, they were sleeping. So I don't know if he was just traveling and they stopped for a nap or what was going on. But they were sleeping in the van and the guy slid the door open, stuck an AK-47 in there. And I got to applaud this guy for the fast thinking, you know, if he indeed was asleep when the door came open, that he had his wits about him that quickly in order to take his hand, as it's described in here, and sweep the muzzle of that AK away and unload his Glock into this guy. Story says that he emptied his Glock into his chest. Now, what the things that he says, some of his quotes here that I don't like is, he says, "I'm from Kingston Town in Jamaica, and I'm not going out like a punk. So I emptied my Glock into his chest. The man tried to get in my vehicle while I was sleeping, and he was surprised to see what I did." Okay, it's not the end of the world. I'm not saying it's the, you know, in my opinion, I think it would be a little better to be a little bit, a little less boastful about what he did. He said, well, he opened the door like this. And he's showing the news reporter what happened. He pointed his AK and I reached around like this and got my gun. And that's how I did this to him. So I thought, if you're going to kill me, you're going to kill me. So now I have to act quickly because I am trained. You know, I have a security license. I have a G license, whatever that is. And I have a state firearms license and a concealed weapons permit, and I have a gun, and I'm a member of the NRA. Okay, that's all great. He said, "I'm going to defend my life and those that I love. My family is innocent, and you don't just put an AK-47 in my face. I will not allow that to happen." This guy also hijacked a woman in a van and was found with her car key. He robbed another woman at gunpoint. Now he says, if you want to come looking for trouble, come to me. Come to me. I wouldn't do anything like this to anybody, and they picked the wrong person in this case. Apparently, you know, no charges were filed. He got, you know, everything's good. I just don't like some of the things he said. He had a gun, forced me to open the door. He told me to open, so I gave him the cash right away. Let's see how I feel. Oh, no, this was another one. I'm sorry. Meanwhile, maybe this is a whole different thing. Now, meanwhile, while Deoinch was at his location at the crime scene, he was approached by Delilah Gator and her boyfriend. Gator said the dead gunman was the, okay, there you go. That's what brings this together. He said the dead gunman was the same man who terrorized her around 6 a.m. This must be the woman he was talking about a while ago. Around 6 a.m. on Saturday, robbed her at gunpoint of $600 in cash, her iPhone, and her 2018 Volkswagen. He had a gun and forced me to open the door. He told me to open, so I gave him cash right away. I feel very relieved now. This was a terrible thing to do to me. I was devastated and I was emotional. This is crazy to rob this man. He has a family, and to do something like that while he was living in the van is not right. Karma is something else. I mean, this woman works hard for her money. Okay, that's enough of all that. Anyway, it's nothing at all wrong with what happened, and probably not anything wrong with what he said. That's just, you know, just some observations that I made. I'd be a little bit more cautious, a little bit more conservative in what I said if I was involved in a shooting. I'm not sure that that's the exact way to do it. So. All right, let's, let me throw a break in here right quick. Let me organize some of this, and I'll be back in just a second.
I'll be back.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Okay, we're back. I thought we were experiencing some technical difficulties there for a minute, but it looks like it's going to come back and everything's good. So let's continue to march here. I want to try to get this done. I've got people waiting on me, so
I may have to end with a long deal here in a little bit. Let me, right here it is. Okay, we talked about that guy. Now, a couple of gun-related things. One of them, there's a guy in Tennessee, stopped at a motel, and was attacked by a bear, a really good size, they said 400 or 500 pound black bear. Now, what's interesting is he was carrying his gun, his CCW. It was a Kimber 45, so obviously 1911. The bear charged him. I guess the dog disturbed him. He was up on the top floor, I don't know how many floors it had, but he was on the second floor. And the bear was up on the walkway up there. And he came at him, and he emptied the gun into the bear. And six rounds, they did some research investigation after it was over with. They found no indication of any bullet hitting the concrete or another, you know, a wall or anything. Apparently, all six rounds went into the bear. Now, here's the interesting thing. Well, there's two interesting things here. The first one is even that 45 at, he said the last shot was like 3 feet. Emptied six rounds into the bear. No way of knowing, you know, where he was hit exactly. He apparently didn't hit him in the head with any of them. But the bear went down the steps and off into the woods, and they never found him. So, great, let me turn this thing off. So apparently, I'm not a big fan of 45s anyway, everybody knows that. This is not so much the 45's fault as the bullet's fault, the type that he used. He used the Federal HSTs, and as I said in my deal that I wrote up about grizzly bears, and I've talked about many times, you must choose the bullet for to match the target. If you're shooting paper, it doesn't matter. If you're shooting humans, you want something that expands quickly and either doesn't penetrate at all or just barely does with enough energy to break the skin, ideally. If you're hunting, deer, you want something that will not expand quite so quickly but still expand relatively quickly. Elk, bear, especially grizzly bear, you don't want it expanding. You want every ounce of that energy to get into the bear, but you want it to go deep enough that it does some damage. Now, let's see. There was something in here, if I can find this. And, of course, he felt the what most people feel when something like this happens. You get the perception of time slowing down, and you see things. You know, there's been... And we've talked about this before. I've talked about guys actually witnessing, seeing the bullet enter the bad guy's body. They find that they have plenty of time to do what they need to do because they feel that time has slowed down. There's a lot more scientific explanation to it than that, and we won't go into it right now because I've got to get this done. But let's see. Guy's 53 years old, blah, 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 speed and accuracy. Okay, I get that. Trying to find out. He'd loaded five rounds with one in the chamber. He found through experience that a fully loaded magazine would be less reliable than his little Kimber. Imagine my surprise. The cartridges were Federal HST, an aggressive hollow point designed for defense against humans. This was a 3-inch barrel 45, so... I don't know what the velocity of these rounds are, but, you know, a typical 230-grain bullet out of a 5-inch barrel 45 runs about 830, 850, something like that, feet per second. So this was a 3-inch barrel, so that was obviously reduced quite a bit. So I'd say, just guessing, I'm going to say the velocity of these were, 725, 750, 780, somewhere in there. And, that's not a lot, you know, to get the penetration that you need for something, especially with that type of bullets. So, said it didn't penetrate enough to get into the bear's vital. 2 weeks after the charge and shooting, a neighbor said he believed he had seen the bear back in the area, but couldn't be certain. It was one big black bear, much like another. Okay. Here's what I was looking for. A retired officer commented about the bullet's performance. He said years ago he had seen a big black bear which had been hit by a car in the late fall. An officer had shot it with a .40 caliber in the neck to put it out of its misery. I don't know why he didn't shoot it in the head, but the .40 caliber hollow point was not sufficient, and a 12-gauge slug was used to finish the job. When the taxidermist skinned the bear out, they found the expanded .40 caliber lodged in the bear's neck. It had not penetrated to the spinal column or entered the chest cavity. In a test by LuckyGunner.com, the HST-45 cartridge had one of the most aggressive expansion and lowest velocities of self-defense 45 rounds. So he says he wished he'd considered bringing his Glock 29, which is a 10 millimeter, and decided against it. And now he's wishing that he had gone with those first instincts. Said they followed the blood trail till it stopped. They never found the bear. And an officer asked why Greg had not retreated to the hotel room, and he said there was just not enough time to do that. So before this next thing is the second interesting part, before we get into that, I hope everyone has an idea of why this worked. The bullet expanded so quickly that it slowed down even more and didn't get the penetration that was desired. Now he's lucky that the bear turned around and left, because if he left and they never found him, apparently I would guess that he probably had plenty of mobility and ability to do further damage if he had intended to. It sounds like he left more because of the noise than anything else. So that's a lesson to be learned there for sure. Now, here's the second interesting thing. He was not cited for shooting the bear. He was cited for reckless endangerment and unlawful discharge of a firearm, if you can believe that. They impounded his Kimber. This is a custom gun with $1,800 in modifications. This is why you don't carry $1,800 modified guns, because if you get involved in a shooting, even if it's a bear shooting, there is a good possibility that gun will be impounded for an undetermined amount of time. It may turn out to be forever. It may turn out to be, you know, even if it's just a few months or a few weeks, the potential there for it to be damaged and scratched is pretty high. So he's going to get an attorney and fight the charges on this. It says the claw marks on the concrete floor of the walkway show, you know, how close the bear was, and there may even be some surveillance video that he's going to try to get. He said the bear didn't have to come at him. It was not trapped on the breezeway. He said the breezeway behind the bear was open with a stairway leading down, that he attacked him because he wanted to attack him. So, let's see, they checked in on Thursday. Until they checked out, a sign had gone up near the register warning about bears. Him and his wife believe if he had not had his .45, he would have been mauled or killed. Well, there's probably a good possibility of that. So anyway, then it has some more stuff here warning you about what to do about bears. I guess this was in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And this was in Econo Lodge where he was at, 2 miles from the Motel 6. They said that there was another attack. The Motel 6 is where he was at. There was a video of a bear on the walkway of the Econo Lodge. And they say it may have been the same bear. So I'll be interested to see how this legal battle goes. If he loses this on either charge, he could lose his carry permit. So this is one of the many, you know, you have to decide to choose life over the many things that may happen to you. Loss of your gun, possible loss of freedom for indeterminate amount of time. So it's sure something to think about. All right, I'm going to save that one. I'm going to save that one. And I'm going to do this one. This is, now before I do it, I'm going to do another one on memory that I read today and didn't save. Remember the shooting at in the California school here a month or so ago? Well, you haven't heard too much more about that, and here's why. That gun, the 45 that he used, nobody's quite certain if it was a 1911 or what, but it was a homemade gun. Now, there's a little, details are a little sketchy on this, but it appears like it may have been an 80% frame that was finished into a, you know, a completed gun, perfectly legal. It was first reported that it was a handgun with no serial number. The serial number had been filed off. But for someone that's unknowledgeable and, you know, just don't know any better, if you can't find a serial number, you're going to assume that it may have been filed off. Well, 80% lowers, 80% frames don't have to have serial numbers because it's not a gun when you receive it. It's a paperweight. It has to do some machining, have to have some machining done to it before it becomes a gun. And so that's why that doesn't fit their narrative. They're going to have to make up something else about this before they say anything about it. Because, you know, all the, with, except for the fact that murder is illegal and taking a gun into a school is illegal, the rest of it about how a 15-year-old or whatever he was acquired a gun and all that, all of their gun laws just all went to hell. And nothing matches. Nothing fits. So this kind of messed them up. We'll certainly hear more about that. There's no question in my mind. So the other story here that goes together with this, they have found a homemade 50 cal. It's captured in Iraq from ISIS forces. And, you know, everybody's saying, oh, yeah, it's just a bomb waiting to go off. You pull the trigger and it's going to blow up and all that, you know, and that's, I don't know how excited I would be to shoot a homemade 50 cal. Not one that looks like this one anyway. But, apparently they're not sure, but they think the barrel was, you know, a takeoff from something else. It got the barrel off of a Modus or another 50 cal rifle of some kind. Everything else looks like it, you know, the scope's mounted on it in such a way that it looks like it's a relatively long-range gun. It's a pretty tacky-looking gun, and it doesn't look like much. But that doesn't mean anything. You know, they didn't – a lot of these guns that the Afghanis and Vietnamese and everybody else that have built in – back alleys of some of these towns and stuff. They're not pretty. They don't look good. They work. And that's all they want them to do. They're not custom guns. They're not polished. They're, you know, most of them, a lot of them are not blued in any way. Some of them may be, you know, spray painted or something, but they're effective. They work, and that's what matters. So my point of this is, the guy that wrote this story is actually going to, they had to get something else done. They're inspecting it and everything. And they actually plan to take this out and do some shooting with it. He said that, it had a, locking lug arrangement rather similar to a Savage 110. And depending on the heat treating of the receiver and the locking lugs and everything, it said it might last from a couple hundred rounds to many thousands. So given the environment that it was made in, they said a couple hundred rounds may be a more realistic service life. But, you know, 200 rounds for a homemade 50 cal in that area up there, that's you know, it's worth having. So anyway, this is, it goes, also goes against the anti-gunners here. When you've got something, you got two guns here that we just talked about that were made from, this one made almost from scratch. You know, the scope mount is exceedingly crude and, you know, everything on it is welded and put together, but it apparently works. I want to see, it's a single shot, of course. And the guy that wrote this is actually a gun expert, and he says he has no doubts that it would stand up to the round for a while. So they are going to shoot it, and I'm anxious to hear what comes of this. So anyway, let me check my time. Okay, this is going to work out just right. I've got something I'm going to play to end this with here for you, and. I've only had the opportunity to play it, I don't know, two or three, four times in the last several years, and I like it. I think it's a fun deal. I might try to modify it a little bit so that it's more, you know, more friendly to use on the show more often. But anyway, I'll have this on for you, and then I'm just going to fade off into the sunset, and I'll see you Friday night for Liberty Lounge, and happy Thanksgiving to all of you. I appreciate you joining me tonight. Good night.
All right, welcome to the Shooting Bench. This is Nostalgia Central here. We've got a few clips for you from various places that the show has been put on. We haven't nearly got all of them by any remote stretch, but we've got quite a few, and I just wanted to throw this in here. This first one, we missed about half of about the first 30 minutes of the show. This was the very first show, certainly the first Shooting Bench, to be done after the collapse of the Watchmen. This was the first show done on Just Measures Radio Network on the 6th of June in 2011, and this was done from a little town in Nevada called Eureka. And we're just going to listen to little clips from a few of these and move on from there. Let's listen in here. You know what, T-Dog? We may try to get Miss Amy in here. She has migrated in here to this diner and is bonding with these folks here. Nice people here. This in Eureka, Nevada, when you drive up there, it says the friendliest little town on the loneliest road in America. And there, that's why we had to stop here and do it, because the next stop is Ely, Nevada, and it's 100, 120 miles, and there's nothing but barbed wire fence between here and there and a few road signs, a couple of antelope maybe. Once again, this is the Shooting Bench. I don't know how this is about the ninth time I've said this. This is the Shooting Bench. I am Cope Reynolds, and this is coming to you live and in Technicolor from Moab, Utah. One of the most incredible views in the world. The land, terrain features and stuff around here are unlike anything anybody else has to offer. We love coming through here. I've been here like a million times, but I never get tired of it. It's astounding. So that's where we're at now. This is the 7th of June. Okay, welcome. It is Tuesday, the 2nd of August, the day before Hump Day, the day before Jason and I will go forth deep into enemy territory, into the belly of the beast, to educate folks in the fine art of pistol craft. We're headed to Ohio tomorrow at 0:30 in the morning, and we should be to Just Measures Coin Shop sometime late tomorrow evening. All right, where in the world is Cope and Jason? Hello, it is Thursday, the 4th of August already, and we are in Mount Vernon, Indiana. Jason and I, we've made a long trip, 26 hours of driving. Welcome to another edition of the Shooting Bench. We drove 18 hours yesterday and stopped where in the heck did we stop? I was tired last night. Little Rock, Arkansas. And this morning got up and come on in to Mount Vernon, Indiana. Anyway, here we are. Jeez, what a trip. Where in the world are Cope and Jason right now?
Well, we are in, well, the locals call it Belle Fountain. It's spelled Bellefontaine, so I don't know which what it is. It's you can look it on the map and call it whatever you want to. But this has been an experience. I told you that Oklahoma's roads suck pretty bad, and Arkansas just sucks, period. And we've got here at Ohio. I've never been a real big fan of Ohio, but I was kind of grateful to get here this time. I found that Ohio is more better than some of the other ones we've been through. This is my third tour to Ohio. Yeah, Jason says we're in BF Ohio, if you can figure that out. And we got here, and our host, gracious, got a nice place to shoot out there. It's been, we got here a little late because we stayed with Bobby a little long last night, but we're going to make that up to him tomorrow. And it's been a lot of fun. By the way, for those of you that didn't know this already, it is Friday, the 5th of August already. Welcome to another edition of the Shooting Bench. We are coming to you, Jason and I, live and in Technicolor from, well, I was going to say beautiful downtown St. Louis, but
it's more beautiful than Illinois.
Yeah, it is. It is beautiful because we just come out of Illinois. So we, and that's why we're late, because we didn't want to stop and do it behind enemy lines. I was afraid that I didn't know if Jay, we've only got two AKs with us and a limited amount of ammunition, and I'm not sure that Jason would have been able to hold them off. And I may have had to play a long commercial break so I could get out there and help him stand them off here. So we made a dash for to get inside America here, and we just did it. We're stopped at a gas station in the sunshine in the middle of nowhere, but we are in St. Louis. So if you hear the traffic going by and everything, we're stopped at a what is that, Jason? Diarrhea Queen or Sonic or some little ice cream place here. And tuning in on us here, it is Tuesday, the 9th of August, and we're coming to you live and in Technicolor from beautiful downtown Shamrock, Texas. We are at Big Vern's Steakhouse in Shamrock. The folks at Big Vern's Steakhouse have been kind enough to let us borrow their air conditioning and their television, their Diet Cokes here for a little bit, and to bring you the Shooting Bench. And next weekend is Pioneer Days in Luna. If you guys can possibly swing the time and money to swing by here and check this out, you will be absolutely flabbergasted. This is a little town. It's not even a town. It just barely classifies as a community. There's 158 people in an unincorporated area. We have Southwest Shooting Authority and one little tiny bitty store, two gas pumps, and a post office. That's it. And 158 people. And that's all there is. But when it comes Pioneer Days, they have, you know, it the average rodeo, professional rodeo, stuff you see on TV, sometimes has 20 and 30 teams. Say, team roping and stuff like that, bulldog and whatever. There are over 50 teams come to this rodeo. I don't have any idea what is so appealing about this little rodeo in this town. Okay, here we are. We are welcome to a special edition of the Shooting Bench on Just Measures Radio. We are coming to you live and in, I was going to say Technicolor, but not really. It's a little bit of green, a whole lot of brown, and some blue skies here. And we are live in Quartzsite, Arizona right now. And this is going to be an exciting weekend, there's no question about it. There's a lot of guns here. There's a lot of people rolling in. My old friend Bob Wright's in here. And I would suspect that Bob Mitzel is probably with him. I don't know how many of his group that he brought. I'll be seeing him right after the show. A lot of things going on, and it appears that from what I understand, the law enforcement here is a little bit on edge, which I can believe that. If you listened to the show yesterday, you heard and found out that it doesn't seem that they're going to receive any help from any of the surrounding communities. And the sheriff here, his old-time buddy, will probably be about the only help that he gets. And I don't say that meaning that he's going to need help. It's just that I know that he wanted help. And we'll see how all this turns out. But there's folks steadily pulling in. We're broadcasting to you right now live from Vito's RV Park right outside of Quartzsite, Arizona. This is the happening place. This is where it's at. I met Vito himself a while ago. And thanks, guys. I appreciate you. I was worried about the sound. I have a great big fan blowing by me. We're sitting outside right now. And we've got a canopy over us, but it's 113 degrees. And sun shining bright, and it's just a beautiful day for a rebellion. Some other things that happened here. Number one, remember 2 or 3 weeks ago we told you that Jason and I and Amy had stopped on in Socorro to get fuel, and we found an old ratty flag flying across the street. And, of course, Amy talked me out of just taking it, so I went and put a note on the door. Well, we went back not once but twice this weekend and found that they have removed that flag. Of course, they haven't put up a new one yet, but I don't care about that. I just care about them taking that old ratty one down. Happened over the weekend at our latest crusade, where we went down to the emergency tree cutting plan that they're implementing down in Otero County. Learned a lot down there. We found out that we are not alone in our quest for freedom and liberty and all things right and normal. All gun related, of course, that may vary just a little bit tonight. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. But anyway, the shooting bench, it is the 11th of December, and Jason and I are tucked away hiding in a little cubby hole in Caldwell, Idaho, trying to sneak through here without making too much to do here. I didn't tell you what they told me down at Walgreens a while ago, did I? You know, I went into Walgreens to get some stuff, and there's two gals back there, and of course I was wearing my gun, as I always do. And she said, "Well, how do you like it here?" And I said, "Oh, it's fine, but I don't live here. We're just traveling through." She said, "Where are you from?" And I told her, and she said, "Well, I figured it was someplace like that. You carrying a gun." So that's pretty much what everybody does around here. And I said, "Yeah, we thought we'd go ahead and cut our trip a little short tonight and stay here instead of going on into Oregon. We had a little extra time. We could have made it on into Oregon." She said, "Oh, yeah, we treat carriers a whole lot better here than they do over there. I'm glad you stopped." Well, you guys are not going to believe this. I'm going to have to put a playlist on here for a couple of minutes. I just heard the dogs barking, and I went outside, and there's a bear in the goat pen, if you can believe that. The bear is dead now, and I'm going to have to probably call the game department here, but he is inside the goat pen, and a .22 Magnum fixed him right up. So I'm not going to interrupt the show, other than I am going to have to play a playlist here for a few minutes, and I'll be back in here in just a little bit. So stand by. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all.
says it all.